Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and blessings to all. Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Starseed Gems, the proud sponsors of the 8th Annual Original Afterlife Conference, November 6th through 10th, 2014, in Durham, North Carolina. And they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. Our guest tonight is Dr. Nancy Zingaroni, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, what's new with you today?
Well, nothing much, but, you know, I'm glancing over at your side of the table, and I see that you don't have any newspaper articles.
I have no newspaper articles.
And maybe I should explain why you have no newspaper, because it's my fault.
Well, it's not your fault.
It was a decision that we made.
It was a good decision.
It really relates to the media. And here in New York, we have subscribed to a local paper called Newsday for many, many years, probably more years than I can.
I want to throw in that when you say local, it's not like local for a little tiny.
Oh, it's a major paper.
It's a major newspaper that covers end to end of Long Island plus the greater metropolitan New York City area.
Right.
So we're talking about gazillions of people.
Yeah, and over the years, you know, they have a nice little section in their paper, which is a calendar of events, and people do read that, we know, and they look for the events for the week. And at first I thought it was coincidence, but year after year, whenever we had, we being Forever Family Foundation, had an event in the greater New York area, we would always send it into Newsday. And much to our dismay and disappointment, it was never printed. And I'm talking, they have all, they not only have major events, but they have knitting clubs. You know, I mean, they have everything, you know, gets put in there. They pick a few things, you know, for each day. And we recently had our a very large event that was held at a local university where Dr. Parisetti was giving a lecture about the afterlife. And this time, I made sure that they couldn't say they didn't get it. So I sent it to them on three separate occasions. And lo and behold, they didn't put it in again. And that this time I had it. So I canceled my my personal subscription, and I wrote to the publisher, and I wrote to the editor, and basically suggested that there's some sort of bias going on. I didn't know what kind of agenda that they had, but for some reason, they maybe because of the work that we do or the stuff that
I also want to throw in that in the years where we've paid Newsday for display ads, we still did not get listed in the calendar. And in addition to you sending that into Newsday for the newspaper publisher, Newsday also owns Cablevision, which is the cable company on Long Island and New York City. And interestingly enough, they didn't post it there either.
Right. So, you know, I can't at this point, you know, after years and years of this, I've had it, and I'm not going to support a newspaper, and I might suggest that other people who might be dismayed at their actions might take that into consideration when they're looking to renew their own, you know, subscriptions. But I did...
We're not renewed.
It's set up for delivery with a different newspaper. So you'll have some articles to look at next year. Not renew, yeah.
Right. And there are other, for our greater Long Island, New York listeners, there are plenty of other quality newspapers to subscribe to. So just as an added insult to Newsday, I'm going to go ahead and mention USA Today and the New York Times. So quality newspapers with actual real journalists that went further than eighth grade. You might enjoy reading those newspapers instead. So give a little looky look at them next time you're near a newsstand and see that you don't want to say sayonara to Newsday and hello to something better to read.
Well, we were all saddened this week with the loss of Robin Williams, and it does bring to the forefront the just how terrible an illness, you know, clinical depression is, and it's something that needs to be taken very seriously, and we should all be looking to support people in any way that we can that are suffering from this illness. But in Robin Williams' case, it's especially, it's hard to fathom, you know, how somebody who spent their life making other people laugh could be so sad, you know, on the inside.
But it just shows you the pain that goes along with despair and depression.
Yeah.
It's a painful thing. And on that note, because I know a lot of our listeners have had losses, and a good many of them had had losses through suicide, that, you know, suicide is not this evil thing that many religions have painted it out to be. From a spiritual point of view, it is another exit from our physical existence here, and it's not something that's going to be punished in the afterlife. And
well, also in Robin Williams' case, remember that he did that movie,
What Dreams May Come,
which was really a film that incorporated the afterlife.
Right, and it did have that negative twist on a suicide, which I understand from the producers and directors that was not the original intent of the movie. But, you know, they Hollywoodize these things, and the original scripts never go the way that they were meant to go.
Yeah. And, you know, I always had this in the back of my mind, you know, in the 10 years that we've been doing this work, is that, you know, it bothered me, especially at the beginning, you know, we're constantly letting people know about evidence of an afterlife and descriptions, you know, of an afterlife. And I worried that possibly that could be some sort of, you know, incentive, you know, for people to go to this better place. But actually, you know, when you look at, when you started researching near-death experiences, you find that, now, these people that have near-death experiences report 95% of the time this wonderful experience, you know, beyond words that they encounter in this other realm. And yet, when you say to yourself, well, then you would expect a lot of people who had near-death experiences to later commit suicide because they want to get back to where they are. But in fact, the statistics show that there are fewer people in the years that commit suicide than those in the general public. So you must say, why? And the only thing that I could think of is because of this life review that they talk about. So,
the life review definitely.
Yeah, I mean, if you now have the perspective of going through a life review where you get to feel the pain, for instance, the pain that
you've caused other people.
Caused other people, then maybe that would be an incentive not to, you know. So
But also with the data on the near-death experiencers, is many of them are given, well, the ones that come back speak of having been given a choice. You can stay here where it's glorious and wonderful, or you could go back. And they're given the option of going back because perhaps there's still more work that they needed to do there. And the assumption would be that if somebody did take their own life and was not given the option of returning here, of being somehow resuscitated, that they did complete their reason for being here. And perhaps the the love. I mean, look at Robin Williams, the love and the laughter and the everything that he brought to this world to make it such a more positive place to be, even though he was troubled. That was his mission, to make other people laugh and other people happy. So he's now on the other side, and he's in the glorious place, and he wasn't sent back. So he did what he was supposed to do here, and from my perspective, we're all pleased to have had him here for the time that we did.
You were just describing Patch Adams. Remember that movie?
Right, yeah, Patch Adams,
right.
Yes.
We're going to go to our break. When we come back, we're going to be talking and learning about the unseen world from a guest, Nancy Zingroni. So stay with us. We'll be back in a few.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
We'll be right back.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Nancy Zingrone. Our sponsor is Starseed Gems, proud sponsors of the 8th Annual Original Afterlife Conference, November 6th through 10th in Durham, North Carolina. And they can be found at www.starseedgems.com. Bob?
And I'm gonna read the long bio tonight because Nancy is involved in so many things that I think we owe it to her. So Dr. Nancy Zingrone was a doctoral candidate in history at Duke University, with specialties in the histories of science, medicine, psychiatry, and American social history. She received her doctorate in psychology from the University of Edinburgh. She conducted experimental ESP research at the Institute for Parapsychology, which is now the Rhine Research Center, where she remains active and is involved in teaching. She has been an active member of the Parapsychological Foundation for more than 25 years and has served on their board of directors. I'm happy to say that Dr. Zingrone also serves on Forever Family Foundation Scientific Advisory Board. Her research interests are broad. They include personality correlates of psychic experiences such as aura vision, out-of-body experiences, and apparitions. She also holds a part-time research position at the University of Virginia's Division of Perceptual Studies. She's taught parapsychology courses in many universities and colleges, including Northeastern Illinois University and other institutions throughout the world. Her academic and scholarly articles have been published in numerous professional journals. And a website you can find out more information is theazire.org. That's theazire.org. Welcome to the show, Nancy.
Thank you, Bob. That's a nice introduction.
Yeah, well, it's you have a lot of stuff going on, and you have for many years. So I mentioned your PhD is in psychology. Much of your career has been devoted to research and education in the field of parapsychology. So I guess those like yourself who are interested in pursuing graduate degrees in the field of parapsychology, unfortunately, sort of have to go in through the back door, so to speak, to take the psychology route?
Yeah, especially in this country. There's actually a number of different ways in: psychology, sociology, anthropology, engineering, and physics. Strangely enough, engineering, that's kind of through because of the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Laboratory that was open from the 70s until the early 2000s. But the majority of folks come in through psychology. There are a number of universities around the world, not that many, but some, yeah, that either have coursework or a research unit connected to a program, typically in transpersonal psychology or consciousness, and or individual faculty members that are willing to supervise a student doing a master's thesis or a PhD thesis, doctoral dissertation, rather. In the U.S., there's very few schools. You can get someone to help you with a master's at Atlantic University, a PhD and a master's at Saybrook University, at Sophia University out there in California. But it's quite a bit better in England, where there's 16 universities that have some aspect of that, including University of Edinburgh, where Carlos and I got our PhDs, my husband Carlos Alvarado. And also now there's two very active groups in Brazil at the University of Sao Paulo in the psychology department, and then an interdisciplinary group at Federal University of Juiz de Fora in the state of Minas Gerais, and that's psychiatry, psychology, history, and I'm not sure what other disciplines are involved, but they have a bunch of graduate students that are working on different projects that come out of those different disciplines. Mm. But it's not so easy, and actually tomorrow at 11 a.m. at the Parapsychological Association, Saturday morning at 11 a.m. at the Parapsychological Association conference in California, which is on this long weekend, there is going to be a panel on the problems of getting a good grounding in parapsychology, education in parapsychology, and I can't attend, so I sent a 9-minute video that will be shown in the middle of the panel about what we're up to, and the if anybody would like to see it, Saturday morning I'm loading a longer version of it up to Carlos's and my new YouTube channel, which is called Parapsychology Online. And that's a good place for people to get kind of a start. I've been doing a primer series for some months, I think even might even be a whole year now, of online resources for people who would like to learn more about scientific parapsychology. And we're also in the process of uploading a number of lectures that we've done over the last couple of years for other universities or in an online course that Carlos and I have been teaching for the Azire. So if you're interested in education in parapsychology, that's a great place to go, Parapsychology Online on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we've been teaching for the Ryan Education Center, and we have a new semester coming up at the end of September.
And those are also online courses. Is that the new trend in well, certainly in parapsychology, but in education in general? I think, are we going to find more and more of that as time goes on?
I think so, yeah, definitely. There's software now and you know, webinar systems, learning management systems, universities getting involved. There's companies like Coursera and Udacity and Udemy that are putting up all kinds of online courses, and they range from free to, you know, relatively expensive. But the very positive part of it is that you can come in from anywhere, essentially. So it's with the way things are costing for a lot of the countries around the developed world, a lot of people are coming back to finish their university degrees or go to that next step, the master's degree, the PhD, when they're already working professionals, they have growing families, they have time constraints, and it's a lot easier to kind of put a program together in either a good online university or one that will give you certificates for adult education, like places like Coursera or the Ryan Education Center or, you know, a number of the other places that are out there. I teach on a learning management system. Our courses, Carlos and my courses, are on a learning management system called WizIQ, WIZIQ.com, which is a webinar system with a lot of wonderful little extras like discussion forums and all that kind of stuff. And it's just, it's easier for the faculty members, it's easier for the students, and then you have that added benefit that you can be in a classroom with 30 or 40 other people, an online classroom, and they're from everywhere on the planet. They're from Mongolia and Africa and India and Australia and, you know, the tip of South America, and then from your own country as well, and you kind of get to make friends across the planet, and that, I think, is a wonderful benefit of online education as well.
Yeah. You know, as you're very much aware, I'm constantly tripping over the so-called, you know, mainstream scientists and mainstream psychologists, you know, who like to paint, you know, parapsychology as some sort of fringe endeavor. I mean, what... Why the prejudice?
Well, for psychologists, it goes back a long way. Psychical research as a scientific endeavor was forming at the end of the 19th century when psychology itself was breaking away from philosophy and professionalizing itself as a discipline and as a scientific discipline, which, of course, you know, harder sciences like physics and other sciences thought, well, that's really funny. You can't have a you can't have a science of something so soft as psychology. So there was this whole kind of period where the two fields were developing together, a lot of the same people working on aspects that were interesting to both the psychical researchers and the parapsychologists and the psychologists. And I think, you know, psychology's endeavor got painted with this brush of pseudoscience because of where we were going. And people were generally not interested in things that they considered to be part of superstition, and they were kind of separating themselves out, and then the disciplines were forming, and we were kind of I'm trying to find a metaphor for being the country cousin, in a sense, you know, the ones that kind of come along and we're interested in things they don't want to talk about, and being very definite about the fact that we're doing important research and that these are really important questions, and they don't want that getting into the way of their own development as being part of science. So I think it started really early. And then depending on how a country feels about what's appropriate and what's not appropriate, our fortunes can rise and fall. And certainly recently, over the last, say, 30 years in the United States, we've suffered quite a lot from organized skepticism, which tends to be completely uninformed about the types of research that we do, and very antagonistic to the types of research questions that we ask. Yeah. So it's difficult.
Yeah, I find there seems to be a common theme among the skeptics, and when confronted, the standard answer that they always give is that there's no credible evidence, which
right.
really means that they're either totally ignorant of it, or they refuse to accept it. You know?
Yeah, and usually a little bit of both, basically.
Right.
Yeah, there's a great two-volume set that's coming out that's being edited by Ed May, who's well-known for remote viewing, and a neuroscience colleague of his from India, Sonali Marwaha. And basically one of the things they're trying to do is to show how the field has evolved inside of science, just like everybody else, and has a lot of the same concerns, and has this enormous database that if it was in any other discipline would be incontrovertible evidence. But because we're studying what we're studying, you know, we don't get a lot of traction with the data.
Right. So you obviously have a strong interest in the personality characteristics of people who have psychic experiences or people that mm-hmm. do well in psi research. So what type of people appear to have more psi ability than others?
Many, I would say an artistic temperament, especially in some of the most recent experiments, openness to experience, a kind of openness of feeling, the ability to, without anxiety, take on information that's coming from an unknown source. So you see it among, for instance, the Gonfeld experiments, and this is this kind of experiment where you've got a receiver sitting in a room and getting all relaxed, and then there's someone in another room who's trying to send a film clip or something to them, and you find that when the receiver is a person who's had psychic experiences or know people they trust who've had psychic experiences, when they're meditators or they engage in some kind of mental discipline, or they're very open to experience or have an artistic temperament, especially musicians and graphics artists, not so much writers, when they have this kind of imaginative life that they are comfortable living with, they're also open to psychic information. So mm-hmm. that's pretty consistent. Extroversion is something that people have found in the past, but this whole notion of being very open to experience is really important. And having come up in an environment where you can talk about these things and these things are not considered to be something sort of weird, you know, that you have to hide. So it's this kind of a more open temperament that seems to be correlated both with doing really well in experiments, ESP experiments. We don't know very much about what makes a good PK participant, but in terms of ESP, and so the mental side of psychic phenomena, not the physical side like psychokinesis or poltergeist,
right.
you see these kinds of artistic, spiritual, open temperaments in people.
Mm. I know you wrote a paper once that involved psychological correlates of aura vision.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I'm not familiar with. What is aura vision?
Well, aura vision is the experience that some people have of seeing some kind of a visual surround, lights or colors around another individual. And there are people who say that they can diagnose illnesses, or they can tell something about how the person they're looking at is feeling psychologically from these colors that are around them. But when you go person to person to person and ask them their experiences, the systems of interpreting what they see can be very different, and the things that they see can be very different. Most people see kind of a little halo around folks, but there are other people who see pulsating lights and, you know, moving colors, or even little shapes and things. So it's pretty different from person to person. But what we know about aura viewers is that they have the same types of psychology as other ESP experiencers, other like OBE experiencers and other types of things. They have this wonderful imaginative life, and they're open to experience. But the very interesting thing that we found out in our studies, we've done a number of questionnaire studies over the last 20 years, is that an aura viewer always has almost every other psychic experience you can name. So while you have lots of people who have a waking ESP dream or a precognitive dream or an out-of-body experience or something like that, maybe only one of them or two of them in their lives, when you get to the, and then they don't have anything else. They just have that precognitive dream, but they've never had an out-of-body experience, or they just have out-of-body experiences, but they've never dreamed about something that then later happens. When you get to the aura viewers, on the other hand, the people who see these colors around other people, they tend to have almost all, if not all, of the other psychic experiences that you can talk about. So they have a very rich life in terms of psychic phenomena, and that we find very interesting. And for two reasons. One is that it's very interesting to ask those folks about their lives and when they first had the experiences and how they fitted into their sense of self. But also in a pragmatic sense, it's great to work with aura viewers because they also have all the other experiences as well. So that's one of the things that we found kind of consistently across our studies and other people's studies, that when you get to the aura viewers, they tend to have had all of the other experiences as well.
That is interesting. I always wondered about that. I know we once did an informal experiment among members in remote viewing, and there was one member in particular that, you know, there was astounding results. And then when I questioned her, she told me that she's been, in addition to being a very good remote viewer, she's been psychic her whole life. She had a very troubled life because she had the full gamut of all these psi experiences that she was having a hard time integrating into her life. So I wonder how common that is for to somebody. I never realized until you just told me that with aura, people that have aura vision, that they already have all these other psi abilities. So that is
It's interesting, and they tend to be rarer than the others. You know, when we do a survey, lots and lots of people will report waking ESP or dreamy ESP experiences. And then a kind of a smaller number of people will report out of body experiences, near death experiences, and some of the other kinds of apparitions, seeing apparitions. Those are kind of in the middle there, where a much smaller percentage of the population will report those, and then an even smaller percentage of the population report the aura vision. But those folks, even though it's a smaller percentage of the population, maybe more close to 8 to 10 to 12%. They have all these other experiences as well. So it's a very interesting kind of phenomena to look at. That they're not as, you know, that it doesn't seem to be as frequent in the population finding somebody that has everything. But right. When you get an aura viewer, then in the main they have everything.
Interesting. Well, we're going to go to a break. We come back. We have lots more to talk about with Dr. Zingroni, so stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida, fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
Mm-hmm. The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Nancy Zingaroni. Our sponsor is Star Seed Gems, proud sponsors of the 8th Annual Original Afterlife Conference, November 6th through 10th in Durham, North Carolina. And they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, it's time for some foundation updates for our listeners. Did you know that you can financially support the work of Forever Family Foundation, a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, without sending us a single pretty penny? When shopping on the Internet, think of us before you go to Amazon.com, and instead go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and use the Amazon link to get to Amazon. Don't worry, there's a link on every page of our website. And if you add that one simple step to your shopping, a dollar percentage of everything that goes into your shopping cart will generate a donation from Amazon to us. And what if you don't shop on Amazon? Not a problem. There's another way to be certain that almost all your website shopping produces a donation to Forever Family Foundation without you having to send us anything. Visit iGive.com. Sign up with iGive. It's free. Name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. And just like with Amazon, a portion of your spending results in a donation to Forever Family Foundation. Once you set it up, each time you shop on the internet, iGive.com will automatically send us a donation when you shop in one of their more than 1,400 online stores that you're probably already shopping in, like the Apple Store and Expedia, Gap, how about TurboTax and Vera Bradley. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Don't miss our Long Island fundraiser, Spirit Sunday, on September 14th at Pomodorino Restaurant in Huntington, New York, featuring Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Lynn LeClaire and Rebecca Ann Lo Cicero, following a full Italian meal complete with coffee and cannoli. And the wait is over. The website is up and registration has begun. Plan to get yourself to Durham, North Carolina, for the biggest and best afterlife conference ever. It's a convention of the top organizations that have been dedicated to the investigation of life beyond this physical life. From November 6th through the 10th, we have loads of special things planned, including a day at the Rhine Research Center with a spoon-bending party. So visit our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, and make your reservations now. This will be a big one, and you don't want to miss out on all the pomp and circumstance. Back to you, Bob.
And we are back with Dr. Nancy Zangroni, who incidentally will be presenting at the conference you just mentioned in Durham, North Carolina, and she will be talking about evidence for survival from hauntings and apparitions research. So, Nancy, we mentioned you touched a little bit before on precognitive experiences, and it seems that most of the time, I guess a majority of the time, when people have these precogs, they're usually of disasters or negative events, something certainly not positive. Any theories as to why this may be?
Well, it's very common in all of the case studies going right back to the beginning of the field that those kinds of negative, attention-arresting events tend to be represented in precognitive experiences, especially in precognitive dreams. And what we've thought over the years is that it's the impact of the emotionality, the largeness of the event, the consequence of the event, how many people are involved in the event, and what's going to happen. And then some of the experiences that are reported are not reported just by people who know nobody personally who's involved, but also by people who are involved, unfortunately, and report to their families the day before, or the week before, or hours before even, that they had this dream of something horrible that they thought was going to happen. Many years ago in the 60s, in the town of Aberfan in Wales, which was a coal town, the coal tip which was above the town, sort of on a mountain crest, and the slag began to move, and it rolled down into the city and completely covered a grade school, and the children and the teachers were killed. And there were reports of precognitive experiences, all kinds of different dreams and intuitions prior to it happening. And then also there were some really sad experiences of children saying to their parents a couple days before, I had this awful dream that we were in this dark place and this kind of thing. So there's the kind that come from the experiencers and that come from people on the outside who may or may not have a connection to anybody there. I think it's sort of similar to what you see in Roger Nelson's Global Consciousness Program or project, where he's got all those random number generators that are set up all around the world, and they seem to change in their operation when something grabs the attention of everybody on the planet, like 9/11 or disasters, the tsunamis, and those kinds of things. So it seems to be this arresting kind of hit of huge emotion that pushes things up into the unconscious from the unconscious. It doesn't mean that people never get good dreams, because there are, and there are even dreams that are extremely trivial that happen on occasion, but as you go down that list from high emotionality down to trivial, it's fewer and fewer are reported.
Right. And as you point out, I mean, in the Global Consciousness Project, there were events that were positive, but yeah. from the enormity of the emotion, like the Super Bowl or the
Academy
Exactly.
Awards and yeah.
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 So do you think, like, if a friend of yours came up to you and told you about a precognitive dream that they had that seemed to be that would have dire consequences, would you advise them to take some steps to possibly change the outcome, or is that possible?
It is possible. Louisa Ryan had some cases specifically, and there's a book out by a guy named David Ryback, R-Y-B-A-C, that was published some years back, about people who took steps to intervene in the event that they saw in their dream. And the success of that depends on how much information you actually get, and frequently you don't get very much. And we have a friend that we know through our various, you know, groups that we belong to and stuff that have to do with parapsychology, who had an odd dream about Robin Williams a few weeks back, I guess, and was worried and was feeling very guilty that the dream was not specific and was similar to one that he'd had before. He'd lost a family member from suicide some years back. So there wasn't enough information for him to use to really tell anybody anything or try to intervene, and he wasn't connected, you know, in the second case certainly wasn't connected to Robin Williams. So a lot of times these dreams just don't have information that you can use. And there's an old one that was published, I think, in Fate magazine in the 80s by a then researcher at the Ryan Center, whose name was Joe Marie Haight, about a gentleman who had a series of dreams about the American Airlines Flight 191 that went down in Chicago in 1979. And in the dream, he was sitting in his living room in his chair watching this plane go down on the news and people talking about how it happened, where it happened, and so on. But they didn't really say it was a major metropolitan airport, and he didn't see the logo of the plane, but he kept having these dreams, and so he tried to get in touch with the FAA and try to make a warning, but he didn't really know where it was going to happen. He didn't know what airline was going to be affected. And he got himself so agitated from not being able to find the right person to talk to about this dream that his boss laid him off said, okay, you need a couple of weeks of vacation. And back home he went, and the night that the plane went down, he was sitting in his easy chair in front of the television and saw his dream unfold, but he just wasn't able to get enough information to do something about it. And then there are people that will have not precognitive dreams, but sort of premonitions, and those seem to work better in terms of avoiding something. I mean, there's lots of tales from 9/11 of people who got on a bus and got sick and got off the bus and started to walk home and missed work that day, so weren't in the train station underneath the buildings or weren't in their office or, you know, that kind of thing. So sometimes the stuff that comes through intuition is just kind of a crucial piece of information with nothing else. So that's another reason why people tend not to try and reach out into the future if they can and try and change things, because when it's a dream, you sort of discount that. You know, you have lots of wild dreams, and why would this really be real? And then you know that your dreams have some information but also have this embellishment, so you kind of distrust them. So there's a couple of different, you know, couple of different reactions to these dreams, but in the main, there just isn't enough information to really avoid something. I had one myself when I was young and Carlos and I were first together, and he was up in Virginia and I was down in Durham at the Rhine, where I dreamed that some on the road up to Charlottesville, it's like a 3-hour drive, some guy came out of a driveway in front of me, and I crashed into him and woke up as the car was crashing. Well, I was nervous like crazy driving up there, and I drove a lot more slowly than I normally would have. I was in my 30s and had a tendency to have a lead foot. So I was really, you know, kind of driving slowly. And halfway up there, a man on a tractor pulled out of a field directly in front of me. If I'd been doing my usual speed, I probably would have rammed right into him. So in some way, sometimes you can kind of moderate your behavior and seem to avoid something that that you've gotten an inkling of beforehand.
Right. If you're getting a precognitive, if you're getting precognitive information, perhaps that's one of many different pathways in the future. You know, and But you raise a really interesting point, and that is that I think it's frustrating for a lot of people to get these bits and pieces, but as you say, not really have enough to take action upon it. It's possible that through training or psychic development workshops that, you know, that people can increase their probabilities of getting more comprehensive information?
Yeah, I don't know of any systematic programs that are set up specifically to develop abilities in that direction, but given that people who do get into courses and workshops and so on to hone their abilities in other areas, I could see that that might be possible. And another problem with these things is when you have the experience and you can't think of someone that you might know in this experience. So this, for instance, a gentleman with the air crash knew nobody on that plane. Sometimes the reaction of the person who has the precognition is that they caused it somehow. So they feel this like combination of an irrational belief that maybe they saw it because they had something to do with it. And then there's this guilt that they didn't have enough information and they couldn't stop it. So we frequently find ourselves in a position, I mean, most of us are not clinicians, but those among us who are find themselves in a position where you're helping people to understand that it's not their fault that they didn't get this, you know, didn't get a completely sort of like newsreel type report of an event that's up in the future that they could actually pull details out and do something about, and that they're picking up this emotional event that's a little bit out in the future. It's not that they have anything to do with it happening. You know, they're not causing it. But those are a couple of the problems that people have when they have these a lot. And so it takes a while to kind of integrate this kind of ability, and the majority of people, thankfully, don't have a lot of these. But when you do have a lot of these, then it's you really have to kind of find a way to understand why you're getting what you're getting and not more. And I personally, and Louise Ryan used to say this too, is that you get the nugget of the event and you get the emotionality, but the rest of it isn't always available to you.
I wish we had more time. You are certainly like an encyclopedia of knowledge.
No, that's my husband.
I know.
I'm the light version.
Yeah, right. Well, from osmosis, you have to.
Right.
Well, the two of you, but don't sell yourself short. I mean, you know more than most people on the planet. So, and we really appreciate that. And you're a lot of you're very interesting to listen to. So, and we look forward to seeing you at the conference. And people can learn more. Go to the website the Azire, azire.org.
And also RyanEducationCenter.org and on YouTube, Parapsychology Online.
So when you're doing a YouTube search, what do they look for on YouTube?
Parapsychology Online.
Okay. All right, great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us tonight. We look forward to you coming back, and we look forward to seeing you in November.
Oh, great. Well, we're very excited about the conference. Thanks so much, Bob. And thank you, Fran.
Oh, we'll see you soon.
All right. Take care.
Yeah.
Have a good evening.
You too.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Richard, David Mello, Henry Stark, Johnny Jackson, Andy O'Brien, Tanya Cash, Stanley Mullen, Glenna Irwin, Lynn Austin, Michael Tim, Patty Potter, Eileen Lafata, Wendy Lippo, Barbara Russell, Tom Donahue, Philip McBee, Doug Berry, Brian, Ann Hutchinson, Kimberly Saavedra, Rachel Skandarian, Jeanette Davies, Miriam Pierzga, Julie Beischel, Barbara Patillo, David Haith, Rita Springer, Mark Barron, Vicky Steffi, Tim Donahue, Jean Lash, Tracy Lee Nash, Eddie Roll, Karen, Andrea, Nina, Diane, and Karen. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this. to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.